you were not here on Tuesday, I created a database. These from a previous year are kind of similar to what I did in class. So if you weren't here and don't have your database, you can download one of those and go with one of those. They're on my week of, and they say created in a previous year, and I made two versions. And so if you weren't here on Tuesday and you want a copy of the database, you can just do this. Okay, I would save it and make it your own and then open it as opposed to opening it. Okay, quiet please. So I would save it and then you can open it. But you can bring it down and just say, I want to save this file and say okay, and it gets taken away and saved for you. Okay, so I am going to go into Access. And it is under Microsoft Office 2016, Access 2016. Okay? So I'm bringing up Access. And then I want to open a file. So I'm going to click Open Other Files, and I'm going to click Browse so that I can look for my file. And I put it out on one of my flash drives, but I'm not sure. Yep, there it is. So I have it out on my flash drive, and I call it Spring 2017. Okay? So I can then click on that, and it will open. So there is the database that I created last Tuesday. And again, if you don't have a copy of it, then you can use one of the ones that I put out on my website that I created a previous year, and you can get and use that one. If you're having problems, ask Eric and he can come around and get you going. Okay, so if you can't find yours or you're having problems downloading or getting one, that's why Eric's here. Okay, so ask for help and he can come around and help you. So you want to go into Access and you want to open the table. Now, I always click on Enable Content here, and it makes that go away. Okay, so I've enabled content. Now, what we did last time on Tuesday is we created a student table. Okay? So, if I want to see that table, I can come over here and click on Student, and there's my table. And I go back and forth between seeing the data. The little tool thing will show me the setup. The spreadsheet-looking thing will show me the data. So I can toggle back and forth between those and see my data and see my spreadsheet, my design. Okay. And seriously, if you don't have an Access up, let Eric know, and he'll come around and help you. Okay? So now I'm going to close the student, because when I'm doing queries, I don't want to have the table open. It gets upset about the table being open when I'm doing queries. So I needed to close the table. Okay, so now I'm going to create a query. And remember I said you click on Create, and then you click on Query Design. So you're going to click on Create, and then you're clicking on query design, and that comes up and asks you what table you want to open. Since we only made one table, it's clearly that table that we want them open, so we're clicking add and then close. So when we click add, it adds that table, and then we close. Okay. So now I've got my data, and I can bring my data down to the layout down here and work with it. So again, I can drag it down. I can actually double click and it will go down. I can click on the little arrow down here and it will show me the things that I have, and I can put them in like that. So some way I need to get the data down here. Now I'm putting all the data down. As we saw last time, you don't have to do that. So it's telling me what field and what table. I can use multiple tables. And we will, toward the end of the semester, come back to Access and use multiple tables. But for now, we're only using one. Okay? So I am going to have the same table name on all of these. I have the check marks here say that I want to show. I could have other data and decide that I only wanted to see certain pieces, so I can make that check mark go away. And then it will still be there, I can still query it, but it won't show in the final display. And then the other thing there is sort, and sort lets you order things in a different way. Right now it's going to sort based on the primary key, the student ID, because that's the way I put it in. But if I wanted to sort on major or sort on GPA, I can tell it to do the sort there. Okay. So what we're going to do now is look at the criteria and the OR line. So what I did last time was I put in CI, and it definitely wants to fix that, so I'm going to put it in quotes so it knows I really only want CI. Okay? And I'm going to say I want CI, and I want people with the number of credits greater than 20. Okay? So these are two things that I'm putting here, and they're in an AND relationship. Okay, so I put two things, and they're in an AND relationship, because they're both on the criteria line. And that means I want students who are CI majors and have number of credits greater than 20. If you have different things and different data, you can put any test you want to put in there. But I want to test two fields, and I want to test them for two things in this relationship. Now, what we're going to do is, this is called a logic flowchart. And a logic flowchart, especially for visual learners, lets you lay out the logic that you want to see. And in fact, if I'm doing anything complicated, I always make a logic flowchart to see how things are flowing if I'm doing anything complicated, because it lets me visually see what my logic is going to be. Decisions have two possibilities, yes or no. You can also label them T and F for true and false, but I tend to use yes and no. So if the major is CI, I want to find out if the number of credits is greater than 20. And if the answer to both those questions are yes, and this is an AND, this, if I get a yes, then ask this. They both have to get yeses, so it's an AND relationship. And if it is, I display. And this is the kind of box you use for I/O, for input or output. So this is a case of output, and so I use that parallelogram to say I want to display it. Okay? If the answer is no, then I don't want to do anything, so I just draw a line down. And the convention of doing flowcharts is that when you make a decision, you connect it to yes and no when the decision has been made. Okay? When you're done. Eric, you're looking for Eric?
Yeah, I missed how you got to that page right there. I'm on tables and I didn't get to the...
So, I now connect the outer decision. So I close off the inner decision, and then I close off the outer decision. Okay? So I've closed off both of these decisions. The only records that will show up are ones that have a major of CI and number of courses greater than 20. Those will display. Anything else will not display. Okay, so that's my logic for this. And I'm now going to go and see the results. And so I am going to say I want to view the results. I can also click on run. And those are the people that meet my criteria. And again, my criteria was I needed CI and I needed this to be greater than 20. And all of them have CI and that is greater than 20. That last line with an asterisk is kind of one that it throws in as if you're going to add another line, this is where you should add it. And it puts zeros if it's a numeric field. Sort of annoying, but it's there. So that's the way it is. Okay? So those are the people that met the criteria. Now, if I want to save this, I click on the X over there, and I can click on it either here or back where in the design mode. And it says, do you want to save the changes? And I'm going to say yes. And then it says, give me, and I'm going to say CI and num credits greater than 20. Okay, so I gave it a very explicit name. I could have just left it and called it query 1 or query 2 or whatever, but I gave it a name. And then when I save this, it will now show up over under queries. So I now have that in addition to the one that I did on Tuesday over there under queries. Okay. So now I want to create another query. So I'm going to click on create, query design, choose my table again, and close. And again, I'm going to bring it everything down. And this time, I am going to test for CI majors and number of credits greater than 20. So I put one of those in the CI, I put in the criteria line, and I put the greater than 20 down here on the OR line. So that is now saying I want them to be a CI major or have number of credits greater than 20. I don't care which one it is. So this is an OR relationship. Okay, now an OR relationship is I test and see if the major equals CI, and if it is, I display. Because because I said one or the other. So if it's CI, I don't care about the number of credits. I go ahead and display. If it's not CI, then an OR gives me a second chance. So I'm asking, is the number of credits greater than 20? So if I give a no, I go look at the second chance. And if the answer is yes, then I display. If the answer is no, I have nothing to do because there are no more chances. So that's an OR relationship. Either the major is CI or the number of credits is greater than 20. Either one of those will get it to show. Okay? So that's an OR relationship. So now I'm going to see if any records meet those criteria. So I'm going to come over here and click on this. And notice that I got one BU major. So that BU major has got to have number of credits greater than 20, and they do. Because I said it was either CI or greater than 20 on number of credits. Okay, the one person that wasn't CI has 34 credits. The others were CI, I don't care how many credits they had. But the non-CI major had to have number of credits greater than 20. Does that make sense? Okay. So now I can save this one also. So I want to save it, and I'm going to call this one CI or number credits greater than 20. Okay, and so I've saved that one. So I've now saved three different queries. So if I work for a company and I have a table, and I frequently want to know the CI majors with credits greater than 20, I save that query. If it's a query that I just wanted to do and I'm probably never going to do it again, then I don't bother to save it. I just get the results. But if I want to, I can save it and go back. Now, the nice thing about this query is that if I add records to the table and I run the query again, the new records get included. So it looks at the latest version of the table in answering the query. So I could have made the query a year ago, but if I add 50 records to the database and run that query today, it's going to include those 50 records as well as the old records. Okay? So it keeps the structure of the query, but it doesn't keep the data. It re-gets the data every time you run the structure, every time you run the query. So now I'm going to create another one. Create query design. Okay, come on, you can do it. Okay, so now let's say that this is what I want to do. I want to have CI majors that have a GPA greater than 3 or I want to have BU majors that have a GPA greater than 2. notice the way I closed the bottom. I closed the bottom. Each decision got closed. So I started out and I asked this question and I closed it. Then I said the no, I put on this question and then asked this question and closed it. And then I move upward as I'm closing. So kind of watch me as I'm doing it and I will try to explain it a little more. So now what I want is CI majors with a GPA greater than 3 or BU majors with a GPA greater than 2. So try that. Think about it. Think about how it probably would get set up. CI majors with a GPA, so CI and GPA greater than. Okay, so I've got a CI and GPA. Or BU and a GPA greater than 2.
What was the first GPA you wanted, the number you wanted to be greater than?
Great.
Thanks.
So think about how you might set that up. And test it and see if you got the right results. When you look at the results, all your CI majors should have a GPA greater than 3, all the ones that show up, and all the PU majors that show up should have a GPA greater than 2. And depending on your data, you're going to get different results. Okay, so somebody tell me what I should put down here. On the criteria line, what should I put?
Under major, you should put BU and CI, two different cells. That's what I did.
Okay, so I'm going to put CI first since that's what I asked about. Let's finish the criteria line.
Okay.
So it's CI or what am I going to put under GPA?
Greater than 2.
Greater than 3. You did BU first, maybe.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I said CI greater than 3, right?
Does it matter?
No.
Okay.
And then what am I going to put on the OR line?
BU.
BU.
Greater than 2.
And greater than 2. Okay. So on the criteria line, I said CI and GPA greater than 3. And on the OR line, I said BU and GPA greater than 2. So I want one or the other, one set or the other. So now we'll go and look at the results and see what I've got. Okay? My CI majors, I've got 3 of them, and they all have a GPA greater than 3. I've got 2 BU majors, and they all have a GPA greater than 2. So it worked. Right? CIs all have a GPA greater than 3, and BUs all have a GPA greater than 2. Okay? Is everybody comfortable with that? Ask questions if you're not. Yes, no, maybe? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm saving. Do you want to save the changes? Yes. And I'm going to call this CI greater than 3 or BU greater than 2. Okay. And again, notice that I'm not using embedded spaces when I name things. Okay. I just remembered that I want to take attendance.
Sorry about that.
No, that's quite all right. It's not my habit, but as I said, the college is getting stricter. I'm not taking attendance because you should be here. You have a choice of being here or doing it online. Okay? I'm taking attendance because I need to keep track of who is still involved in the class. Okay? And I'm asking you to send me an email every week. But this is kind of my backup for the ones that are not taking it online, that I can at least get the attendance and make sure. Okay? Okay, so now I'm going to create another query. So I'm going to go in and say create a query. That one doesn't always work well when you double click on them. They should work, but it doesn't always. Okay, so now what I want is I want CI majors and I want CI majors that either have a GPA greater than 3, or a number of courses greater than 20. Top and close that one up last. Okay. So, do I want any CI majors, anything other than a CI major to display?
No.
They have to be a CI major, right?
Yes.
But if they're a CI major, they have two possibilities. They can either have a GPA greater than 3, or they can have number of courses greater than 20. Either one is fine. So it's got to be CI and this is an either or between those two. Okay, yeah.
Oh, number of courses, is that number of credits?
Number of credits. Oh. I said courses, sorry.
No, it's okay.
Number of credits. Yeah, we can make a number of courses. Then they're going to have taken 20 courses, okay? Whatever. So, I now have a major of CI and either of these. Try to figure out how you'd set that up. CI has to be true. And this one's kind of tricky. got the most unusual patent, the way it's wandering around. Because something you've signed it, right? So, okay. Whatever.
Obviously, I'm currying.
Okay, so I said CI and either of the other two. So, okay, so how am I going to fill this one in? Yeah.
You put for the major, you put CI and the horse spine.
Right, and I shouldn't have called on you because I knew you knew the answer. Okay, so, did you all hear what he said?
No.
Oh, good. So now tell me what you think. Well, somebody tell me what I should do.
Put the CI in the criteria and the OR and the...
Yep.
Then three and only criteria and the greater than 20 and the other one.
Right. So I have CI and greater than 3, and then I need to put CI again with greater than 20, okay? And that seemed to make sense to a lot of you, so that's good, because that's usually the one that trips people up. This one here has to be true. And since it has to be true, I need it on both the criteria line and the OR line, because it has to be true. Okay? So I need CI and greater than 3, CI greater than 20. Okay? So that has to be true. So it has to show up on both lines. Okay? So I now are saying I only want to see CI majors, and they need one of the other two criteria. So if I go over here and view it, okay? The only one, okay, this one did not have a GPA greater than 3. Those three did. But this one had the number of courses greater than 20, so it was fine. Because I needed either the GPA greater than 3, or if it wasn't, I needed the number of courses greater than 20. And the CI had to be true, so it's always showing. Okay, if I go back and look at this criteria and I take the CI out of there, what does that do for me? What is that now saying?
Any major over 3 or with courses greater than 20.
It's saying that I need to have either CI and greater than 3, or just greater than 20. Greater than 20 is standing alone because it's the only thing on the OR line. Okay? So this would say I need CI and greater than 3, or just greater than 20. So if I run this, I'm going to see a BU student in there, okay? Because they met the criteria of being greater than 20. So they're there, even though they're a BU major. Because I said CI and greater than 3 or just greater than 20. Does that make sense? So now I'm going to go back and actually change that back to CI so I can save it that way. So I want to save this as CI and either, I'm going to just call it. Okay, so I saved it as CI and either.
What did you hit save? I didn't see that.
The X over at the side. Yeah, I just went back in and changed what I had there. Okay. So let's say I want to have CI majors with greater than the GPA. Greater than 3, which we already have, or CI majors with a number of credits greater than 20, which we had, or BU majors with a GPA greater than 2. So I want 3 different things. So what I can do is, it only tells you criteria in OR, but if the line down below can also become an OR. So you can put a third thing down there. Okay, so give this one a shot. Actually, I think that's all I got, but anyway.
Yeah, go ahead. Actually made up major.
Okay.
So I asked.
Okay, so this one I'm going to have, what do I put on the first line, on the criteria line?
CI.
And notice again that the CI is in quotes. And then what do I put on the GPA? And notice again that the 3 is not in quotes. And that's the difference between a string literal and a numeric literal. A string literal is letters, numbers, and special characters, any one of them. And it has to be in quotes. Numeric literals are not in quotes. If I put it in quotes, it then becomes a string literal. Okay, so now I need down here CI again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can do them in any order. And number of credits for that one is greater than 20, right?
Yep.
And now what do I put on this third line?
BU.
BU.
Or GPA greater than,
yep, right. So now I have those three possibilities. And if I view the results, okay, the BU are both greater than 2. The CI, the ones that aren't greater than 3 have number of credits, or the one that doesn't have greater than 3 has number of credits greater than 20. Okay. So this one was the BU and greater than 2. The one up top was the CI and greater than 3, although results are the other one, but greater than 3 is the first one it checked, so that's the one that got it there. And on the next one, I've got, well, down here, this is CI and greater than 20, and so all of them end up meeting the criteria one way or another. Okay. And I'm just going to erase this part. I've saved enough. Okay, so now let's go with, I want BU or CI, student ID greater than 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, and GPA greater than 2.5. I didn't. I cheated. Numbers greater than all twos, make up another number.
Yeah.
Just make up whatever number you want. If you don't have any IDs greater than 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, then, you know, put in something there that works with your data. Okay. That works with your data. Okay, so where do I put this? What do I write first on the BU? And it doesn't matter the order I do them. And then down here, I'm going to put CI and what else? Okay. Greater than 2, 2, 2, 2, 2. And GPA greater than 2.5. Right? So this one has three things. It's either I want BU majors and I don't care, or I want these three things. Now notice what happened in STU ID. What did it do? I entered 5 twos. What did it do? Put in quotes. Why did it put in quotes?
Short text.
That's right. When I define the table, if you go and look at the definition of the table, I made STU ID a short text. And so since I made it a short text, Microsoft, with its propensity to fix things, put quotes around it. okay? And they were right this time. They're not always right, but they were right this time. And these were numbers when I defined them. And so with numbers, it left them without quotes, okay? Because those were numbers when I defined them. So Microsoft fixed that for me. Okay, so now if I go back and I look at the results, I've got, apparently I only have two BU students, and my CI students both have IDs greater than 2222, and they both, and they also have a GPA greater than 2.5. Okay. Now notice the difference in the placement. This is a number. And notice that it's placed up against the right wall. This is a short text. And notice how it's placed. It's placed up against the left wall, as is the name, which is also a short text. As is the major, which is also a short text. These are numbers. And they are placed against the right wall. And text fields are placed against the left wall. So just not even knowing that I defined it as a short text, if I look at the placement, I say, oh, that's a short text field. That's a number. Because the placement is different. Okay? So that's a way to look at the data without going back and know whether it is a numeric or a string text field. Questions? Okay. I am actually going to move on now. On Tuesday, we're going to have a group thing where you're going to break up into groups of two or three, and you are going to... I'm going to give you a bunch of problems and you're going to figure out the solutions. And you're going to work as a group on that on Tuesday. So when you come in, you want to, number one, place yourselves so that I aim for groups of three, but I end with groups of two. Doesn't matter who's in your group, but if you care, then do something about it. But essentially, I'm going to have you work in groups of three to solve a bunch of these problems. And I'll give you that project next Tuesday. If you're an online student, then you get to work online, which is, as far as I'm concerned, a lot harder. So if I were you, I'd come on Tuesday because it's a lot easier to get it done during class working with classmates than it is to contact your group of three and work online sending emails back and forth. Okay? So, all putting it up in the cloud and working, but then you have more work to do. So anyway, you look at it. Life is a lot easier if you happen to come to the, when we do an in-class thing. Okay, so what I'm going to do for the next few minutes is just, as I told you, I want you to read chapter one, and it's got vocabulary. You don't need to have the book with you. I'm just going to open it so I don't forget something. But I'm going to point out a few things in the book in chapter one. First of all, okay guys, my turn. There's just a lot of vocabulary in this chapter, and I would look through and make sure you know the vocabulary. What I'm going to do is talk a little bit about what makes a good what you have to do to write a program. And then we're going to talk about the parts. So the book gives you a list, and I'm going to use the words in the book. But the book says that when you are writing a program, So if you're doing programming. And if you're working with programmers, that's the same thing. The first thing they say is you need to understand the problem. And that's very, very true. Because people tend to give you instructions kind of like I do for homework. You know, kind of cryptic. You kind of have to try to figure out what I meant sometimes. Well, people are going to do that to you when they ask you to write a program, too. And if this program is going to take you a long time to write, it's best to understand what they're saying. The technique I always use when I was writing a program for people is I would meet with them, get an understanding of what they needed, then I would write down my understanding, send it to them, and ask them to sign off on it. Okay? This is my understanding of what you want. This is what I'm planning to do. You sign off on it and tell me that we're in agreement, and then I'll do it. If you're not in agreement with me, tell me what I need to change and go back and forth and make sure I understand what the person or people need. It's even worse when it's a group. Okay? So I want to understand what they need because I don't want to get 3 weeks into writing this and find out that that's not what they wanted. Okay? Lots of times you end up having to fix programs anyway, but it's not from the understanding, it's from they didn't think through the results they wanted as well as they should. So the next thing you do is plan the logic. Okay? And good programmers do that. They don't just pick up and start coding. They make a plan. They plan the logic. And some of the tools that you use to plan the logic are a flowchart, which you saw me do today, and pseudocode. And your book talks about both of those, and we'll look at pseudocode as we go along. Pseudocode is simply writing out the program, but not in programming language, just writing out the logic. Okay, so I would write an if statement, and I would just write out the logic. Or I would say, I want to do a calculation. I want to add these two things, multiply by that, and divide by that. So I just write it out in English, step by step, and that's called pseudocode. Okay? Then I code the program. Okay, so the next thing is to code the program. And this that I code is called source code. Now, when a programmer writes a program, they can write in Visual Basic, they can write in C, they can write in Java, they can write in PHP, they can write in JavaScript. There's a whole lot of languages they write in. Those languages are for programmers. The computer, the dumb machine, it wants everything in machine language and ones and zeros and all that good stuff. Programmers don't want to do that. I've done it once. I never want to do it again. You know, it took forever and a day. So, what you're going to do is you need to do a compile or use an interpreter. To translate. And you are going to translate into object code. Okay, that's the machine language that the computer understands. And I don't think I used the words they use. They said using software, well, yeah, translate. I came close. So I'm translating the program. Now, a compiler tends to translate the whole thing. and give you the machine language for the whole program. Interpreters tend to translate as they go. Translate the first thing, do it. Translate the next thing, do it. Translate the next thing, do it. When it encounters a problem, let you know. Okay? So those are the two ways of doing that. So once you get the program written, the next thing you have to do is test it. And you have to test it with data. So, in a well-run operation, I write my program, I pull together the data, and I test my program. And I think it's working just fine. But in a well-run operation, I'm then going to be given some code, some data that somebody else made up, and see if my program can handle that data. Okay? Because it's easy, if you didn't think of something when you wrote the program, you might not think of it when you made up the data to test either. So it's better when you have it and you test with somebody else's data. And then, if possible, you do live testing with the data that the company has and is using. And so you do live testing and test it there. And the program should not go into production until you're reasonably sure that it's right. Now, you know how many updates and fixes you get. So clearly, things are not working quite right when they go into production lots of times, because then they have to send you 10,000 updates to it, and the updates are frequently fixing things as opposed to enhancing things. Sometimes they're enhancing, but lots of times they're fixing. And you know how many fixes you get. Okay. So the next thing is you put the program into production. Now, the safest way to do that is to run the new program, and if there's an old program that's also working, run them parallel, because then if you run them parallel and something's wrong, your world still goes on, especially if you're generating something like paychecks, which people are not going to want to hear. Oh, you can't get paid this week, the program doesn't work. Okay, so it's best if you run in parallel. Okay, now, the next thing is maintenance. You have to do maintenance. And maintenance is basically fixing problems and also doing enhancements. So, essentially, the program starts to run, and the people that are using, let's say it's a report or a screen, and they say, you know, I wish I'd thought of this, but that column over there and that column over here, I frequently compare. It would be so much nicer if they were right next to each other. Can you fix it so that those two columns are next to each other? And you say, sure, and you fix it so those two columns are next to each other. Because that's a nice, easy fix, and it makes the person more productive when they're using it. So usually most companies are very helpful and go ahead and take suggestions a lot right at the beginning. But after the program's been in production for a while, they basically say, okay, unless this is a catastrophe and people aren't going to get their paychecks, submit it, we're going to put them in a pile, and every 2 months, we will make those changes that are in that pile. Or every month, or every 3 months, or whatever, we'll do the maintenance. But we're not going to do maintenance on a regular basis after the beginning, after we're kind of sure that the main problems are okay and have been fixed. And so those are the steps you go through when you're writing a program, okay? And we're going to be looking at logic and coding programs and going through, basically, we will not be putting them into production, but we will be doing all the rest of it. Okay. Questions? Okay, what I want to look at next is the part about the coding and compiling. So we're going to look at what we do there. So the programmer writes the program. Okay, so you're sitting at your screen and you write the program. And you feed it in and you download the compiler. Okay, so your program is data for the compiler. The compiler is going to read your program and do the translation. Okay? And the compiler is kept out on a disk or whatever, and it's brought in and loaded in the program and loaded in the computer, and your program is the data that the compiler is using. Yes?
Does that say compiler on the top as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
It seems to. So this is your source code that you're writing. Okay, so this is your source code. Because you're writing the program and saving the program, that's your source code. Now the compiler will then generate and put it out on disk, usually, your object code. Okay, so it took your source code and it generated the object code, if it can. Okay, if it can. If it can't, it's going to bring out errors and let you know about the errors. And the errors, in fact, will go up on the screen and let you know about errors. And so then you have to fix the errors and recompile. And you have to keep doing that until you get clean. Okay, until this is clean. Now, there are several kinds of errors. There are warnings and there are fatal errors. And a fatal error means the object code can't be generated. Okay, now what kind of errors are we talking about? Well, let's say that you have a statement that you want to say write, W-R-I-T-E, and you write it as W-R-I-T. Compiler doesn't know what WRIT is, and so that would be a fatal error, because it can't translate that. If you wrote odd instead of add, it can't translate that. Okay? So the compiler, if it finds fatal errors, that's when you have to go back. It also tells you about warnings. So you've got two categories. You've got fatal errors, and you've got warnings. Okay. So you've got fatal errors, that says fatal sorta, and you've got warnings. Okay? The warnings, it will go ahead and generate the code for you, because it's just things that it can figure out, it thinks. But it's not sure it figured it out right, so you get a warning. So then the object code gets loaded into the computer, and you can bring in some data that you have on a disk, or you can bring in data from a screen. So you can bring data in, whatever data the object code needs. So it may be coming in on a screen where the user is putting in some data, or it may be coming in off a disk or wherever it is stored. Okay? So now the object code runs and it produces output. What it had up here was input. It produces output, hopefully. Okay, and your output could again be put onto a disk, it could be put onto a screen, it could be put onto paper. Your output is put someplace, okay? So you get your output. Now what you've got to do is evaluate your output. So you need to check it. When it talked about checking the program, I've got to check my output. And if there is a problem with my output, then I have to go all the way back over here, fix it, recompile it, and re-execute it. So I have to go all the way over and fix the program, recompile it, and re-execute it. The errors that you are finding over here are called syntax errors. That's misuse of the language. These errors are logic errors. Okay? When I was calculating your pay, I added your hours worked and your pay per hour instead of multiplying them. Okay? So if you work 40 hours and you make $50 an hour, then I start adding those, you're going to get $90. Okay? You're not going to be too happy. So that's a logic error. I made a mistake. I added instead of multiplying. Okay? That's something the programmer did or forgot to do. But it was a logic error. This one is a syntax error, which is a misuse of the language. Okay? I didn't use the language correctly, and so the compiler couldn't figure out what I was talking about. Maybe it requires semicolons some places, and you forgot the semicolons. You know, there's a whole variety of misuse of the language, and those are caught by the compiler. Now these, the logic errors, are caught by people. Okay, people have to catch these. People have to check and catch. And a lot of you are going to end up passing in programs that don't make sense when you run them, but you don't check them carefully enough and you don't notice that they don't make sense. Okay? If you end up with a negative number for pay, probably you're a little bit off on that. Okay? If you take 10% of 1,000 and end up with 10,000, probably you made a mistake there. That's not a syntax error. That's a people error. You know, you multiplied by the wrong thing. You added instead of multiplying. That's a people error. And that's a logic error. Questions? Okay. They give you examples of pseudocode and flowcharts in here. I think the next thing that I want to point out is assigning values to variables. And they talk about that on page 17 in your book, and just make a note of that. It's what we talked about already in Access. That essentially, if you've got a variable, you've got to decide whether it's a string variable or a numeric variable. And that's what they talk about on page 17 and 18. Okay? You've got, actually 19. You've got numeric variables and you've got string variables, and you talk about that. And we've already done that in Access, okay? Because basically when we set up our structure, we chose whether things were going to be numeric or short text fields, okay? And we saw our Access fix when I typed in 22222 and it put the quotes around it. It was doing a fix and saying, no, this should have been a short text field, not a numeric field. Usually numerics are used for things where you're going to want to do calculations. If you don't want to do a calculation, it doesn't matter. But if you want to do a calculation, you want the field to be numeric. So I made my ID short text because I'm not going to do a calculation with that. But I could have made it numeric since I just put numbers in the field. But I'm not going to do a calculation with that, so short text is fine. Okay? But I might be doing some kind of a calculation with number of courses, for example. So I wanted number of credits, right? I keep saying number of courses. Number of credits, so I want that to be numeric. Okay? Okay, questions? You have a quiz that's due Tuesday. I do not take late quizzes. Okay? So it has to be in Tuesday by midnight. Do me a favor and don't send it at 11:59 and then say, oops, it didn't go through. Okay? If you send it at 10, then you have time to deal with the fact that it didn't go through. But if you send it at 11:59, you can't deal with the fact that it didn't go through. Okay, so... questions.
When do we save the access, the latest one for?
Pardon me?
How are we going to save the latest access query?
Just click that X and give it a name.
Okay.
I cheated again and didn't save it either. Okay, we are done. Get the quiz to me. It might even be nice to send it in early. It's only 10 questions, guys.